Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Brian Rusk.
Welcome to The Rusk Report on the Bet 1520. We're very happy to be taping in Passau, Germany. A gentleman who is noted for having a great understanding of history in the region and the canal system in Europe. His name is Dr. Andreas Klein. He's involved with a group called Urban History. I heard a lecture by his counterpart, Alexander Estel, on the Uniworld Riverboat, and it was very fascinating because where we held program is the foot of the terminus of the Erie Canal in New York State, which of course brought great wealth to New York State and opened up trade to the Midwest. So we're going to learn all about the canals and waterways in Europe, in Germany. And our guest is Dr. Andreas Klein. To tell you a little bit about him, Dr. Klein has worked for more than 10 years as an assistant professor for history at the University of Freiburg and Göttingen. He studied history, political science, and psychology at the universities of Kiel in Germany, Edinburgh, UK, Basel, Switzerland, Freiburg, Germany. His fields of specialty are the history of religion and of ideas. Since 2015, he gives lectures on cruise ships and is a lecturer for history at the University of Göttingen. Our guest today, Dr. Andreas Klein, and again, we're taping from the River Duchess, and I'm happy this is his first radio appearance, and as we blanket 17 states and half of Canada, we welcome very much Dr. Andreas Klein. First, tell us, what is the group you are involved with called Urban History? As I heard the lecture with your counterpart, what is Urban History all about?
Yes, hello. First of all, thank you very much for having me on the show. Well, Urban History is a group of persons who deliver speeches and lectures on river cruise boats who are sailing on German rivers, mostly on the Danube River, the Main River, the Rhine, and also the Main-Danube Canal. And we are people who think it very nice and important to help tourists coming over here to understand our country. And so we deliver lectures about the canal, as I said, about Bavaria, to explain people the local history and culture of the persons. And in this way we try to educate people on river cruises and entertain them.
And if somebody is listening in Toronto or Buffalo or Manhattan and they'd like to get in touch with you, I think some of your associates have written books.
Yes.
How do they get a hold of you? Where do they get these books?
Well, we do have a website. It's, I don't remember actually the address of it. Oh yeah, the address is www.urban-history.eu. That is the address of Urban History, and there you can get in touch with us.
Very good, very good. Now, let's talk a little bit about navigation and tourism on the Rhine River. Dr. Andreas Klein, if you could give us a little bit of history going back through the centuries regarding navigation and tourism on the very famous Rhine River.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the Rhine River, tourism, you could argue, started at the end of the 18th century. You see, the 18th century, especially young aristocrats were doing tours of Europe as a standard part of aristocratic education at that time. And they visited France, Germany, and of course Italy, Rome as the last station usually. And then from Rome, they went back to Britain, in case we were British aristocrats, obviously. And the easiest way back from Rome to England is, of course, to sail on the Rhine. And so at the beginning of the 19th century, aristocrats like Lord Byron, for example, traveled there, and they wrote books and memoirs, travel memoirs about it. And this way, the Rhine River became more and more popular with people who wanted to travel in Europe. Then famous painter William Turner, contributed to that. He painted a couple of paintings about the Rhine River, and so the Rhine River became more and more popular with travelers in Europe.
Very good. And how many people come every year to visit the Rhine River and the Danube? Is it in the millions?
Ooh, yes, I would say. I would say it is in the millions from all over the world, from America, Australia, Britain, and increasingly from China as well.
Now, we're getting off the pandemic. People are much healthier now, post-COVID. But that really hurt the tourism on the Rhine and Danube rivers in the last 2 years, didn't it?
Of course it is. In the year 2020, we had no cruises at all because of COVID pandemic. And so that was a serious blow, of course. It started slowly in 2021 again, and now it's approaching the old levels, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the Main River. If you could, it's spelled in English Main, M-A-I-N, but it's pronounced in Germany Main River. If you could tell us about this river, people know more about the Danube and the Rhine. Tell us about the Main River and the history.
Well, the Main River flows in east-western direction. It flows through the northern parts of Bavaria, which are called Franconia. Very, very beautiful towns are situated on it, like Bamberg, for example, which has an extremely nice and beautiful old town, which is situated really on a couple of islands situated in the Main River. And then the Main River goes down to Frankfurt, on the Main, one of the largest and most vibrant cities of Germany. And well, along the banks of the Main River, you have very fine vineyards, for example, which produce a very fine wine, I may say. Mm-hmm. And they also make for a very beautiful setting when you sit on the ship and you enjoy the beauty of those vineyards. It's very beautiful.
Very good.
And there's a couple of Baroque castles as well, situated near the banks. So it's really a very fine scenery to enjoy.
Very good. Now, again, if somebody's interested in purchasing some of your books or reading more about the river system, the canal system in Europe, what website should they go to, or where should they go to purchase these books?
Well, we have, as I said, our own website, Urban History. The address is www.urban-history.eu, and we have written, two of us, for example, have written a book about the Main-Danube Canal.
The name of the book, please.
The book is The Main-Danube Canal, and it was written by Markus Urban and Daniel Gürtler. It's available in English, and I think you can even purchase it on Amazon, but I'm not really sure about that one, but at least we can help you to find it.
Very good. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Danube River. As I'm taping this program, we are on the Danube River in the beautiful city of Passau, Germany. And tell us about the history, the interest, the vitality of the Danube River over the many centuries. Dr. Andreas Klein with Urban History.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Danube River is, I think, the longest river which we have altogether in the European continent. It's flowing through a couple of countries. It starts in Germany and then flows through Austria, Slovakia, Hungary, Serbia, Bulgaria, and Romania. So really a huge number. And they even used to be a state which was in a way named after this river, because, you know, there was the so-called Austrian-Hungarian Empire, which comprised most of the countries I've just mentioned. It broke down in the year 1918 as a result of the First World War. It was an emperorship ruled by the famous Habsburg dynasty, and because the Danube River was flowing through the whole of this empire and most of its metropoles were situated on the banks of the Danube River, this empire, this Austro-Hungarian Empire, was very often called the Danube Empire. And so on the banks of this Danube River, you have not only all the metropoles of these countries like Vienna, for example, or Belgrade or Budapest, but you also have a large number of very beautiful Baroque castles, because all the main aristocratic families of that empire, mm-hmm. of course, wanted to live near that artery, that main artery of that empire. And so this, to sail on the Danube River, is really a journey through European history and through many, many different cultures of Europe.
Now, a lot of people are not familiar of the Roman Empire and their domination for decades and centuries in this region of the world, in Germany. Tell us how the Roman Empire came and controlled the German area.
The Roman Empire didn't control everything of the German Empire because they found the Germanic tribes living there too chaotic and too aggressive to be ruled permanently as their subjects. And mm-hmm. so instead they only went to the large rivers of Rhine and Danube. They decided that the large part of Germany east to the Rhine and north to the Danube was just too unruly to be ruled by them and too poor at the same time, and so it wasn't worthwhile their effort. And so instead they used the Rhine and the Danube rivers as border bulwarks. They created a large a string of castles, of border castles along those two rivers, and used these large and rivers with very strong currents as border bulwarks. And so you can find a lot of ancient Roman reliques and sources over there.
Very good. We're learning a great deal about the river system in Europe. We're learning about the Danube and the Rhine and the Main rivers with historian Dr. Andreas Klein, and he is involved with urban history. Again, if you tell people where to go, what website to purchase your books on the history of this region.
Our website is www.urban-history.eu.
Very good. A little plug here. Western New Yorkers love their traditions, and the Ampol Legal has been writing about Polish-American traditions at events for over 50 years. News and features from a Polish-American perspective can be found in this weekly's newspaper, as well as recipes and a calendar of events. Don't miss out on the next cultural presentation or polka dance by reading the Ampol Legal. The Ampol Legal is available in many Tops and Wegmans stores for home delivery. Call 716-835-9454. That's 716-835-9454 to have the latest news from Poland and Polonia in your mailbox each week. And we're not far from Poland. It's probably, 300 miles from here?
Roughly.
Where we're taping the program today. We're on the Danube River with noted historian Dr. Andreas Klein. Again, he is involved with urban history. For those who have just tuned in, he has worked for more than 10 years as an assistant professor for history at the University of Freiburg and Göttingen. He studied history, political science, and psychology at the University of Kiel, Germany, Edinburgh, UK, Basel, Switzerland, and Freiburg, Germany. He's been all over the place, and now he's on the Rusk Report on the Bet 1520. If you're listening in Montreal, South Buffalo, or Washington, D.C., drop us a note. We'd like to hear from you. Please write to Brian Rusk, the Bet 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. We always greet cards and letters from our European and Canadian listeners, as this station has received, with its 50,000 watts of clear channel power, letters from Scandinavia and New Zealand. Our guest today, again, is Dr. Andreas Klein on the Rusk Report on the Bet 1520. Now let's talk about the mountains and the water system around the mountains with the Main and Danube rivers. Tell us the significance of this, Dr. Andreas Klein.
Yes, the Main River and the Danube rivers are streaming, I would say, in a parallel way. The Main in the south And in the north, sorry, the northern parts of Bavaria and the Danube River, roughly 120 kilometers to the south of it. The Main River flows into western direction into the Rhine, whereas the Danube, and the Rhine flows into the North Sea and so into the Atlantic Ocean, whereas the Danube River flows into eastern direction into the Black Sea, which is connected with the Mediterranean. And so, if we would have a waterway between these two rivers, you would have an undisturbed waterway between the Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea. Problem is, between those two rivers, there is a mountain range called the Franconian Swiss. The Franconian Switzerland, you could perhaps say, the Fränkische Schweiz. Mm-hmm. And so there is, unfortunately, no river flowing between these two. There is even a line between them, you could perhaps say, because the European continent as a whole is divided into two hydrological spheres. All rivers in the northern sphere, like the Main and the Rhine, flow into northern direction, whereas all in the southern sphere, like the Danube River, flow into southern direction, to the Mediterranean. And so no river overcomes this European watershed. And that's of course a sad thing, because as I said, we would have an undisturbed waterway if it did. And that is the reason why finally the so-called Main-Danube Canal has been built. It overcomes the European watershed, and so because of that canal, we now do have such an undisturbed waterway.
Very good. If somebody listening in Cheektowaga, New York, or Northern Florida, Toronto, would like to buy some books with urban history, Dr. Andreas Klein, where should they go to find out this information?
Mm-hmm. Well, you could visit our website. It's called www.urban-history.eu, or you could drop us an email. Our email address is info@urban-history.eu. So there you could drop us an email.
Very good. Now let's talk about the Central European watershed. This region is referred to in this way. Let's talk about the physical attributes, the economy, tourism, throughout this Central European watershed.
Mm-hmm. Well, this Central European watershed is in a way a line going through all the European continent, as I just explained, and as I said, no natural river overcomes this European watershed, and so it is a huge barrier to trade and tourism, of course. And since we have built this Main-Danube Canal, which connects the Main and the Danube River with each other, you can now cross this line, and so that is the reason why you can, for example, make a cruise from Amsterdam in the Netherlands up to Budapest in Hungary. That is only possible because of this Main-Danube Canal, and that is the reason why they built.
Very good. We're very honored to have Dr. Andreas Klein. He's involved with Urban History. They do have books available. He is going to mention the website again, where to look on that. It's a very important part of European history and modern tourism today throughout the Danube River and the Rhine River in Europe. I'd like to thank those who called regarding our recent guests, Sam and Joe Cardinale, involved in the insurance bonding industry, Erie County Board of Elections Commissioner Ralph Moore, and humanitarian George Miller, who's had humanitarian missions worldwide. Again, any thoughts or comments, please write to Brian Rusk, the Bet 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. We always greet cards and letters from our Canadian and European listeners. Dr. Klein's fields of specialty are the history of religion and of ideas. Since 2015, he gives lectures on cruise ships and is a lecturer for history at the University of Göttingen. Our guest today, Dr. Andreas Klein with Urban History. Now, we tape this program usually in Buffalo, New York, which is the terminus of the Erie Canal. And when Governor DeWitt Clinton had the canal built, people laughed at it. They called it Clinton's ditch, Clinton's folly. I understand Charlemagne, when the development of the canal system in Germany took place, they called it Charlemagne's trench, similar to Clinton's ditch. Well, wasn't this really a great vision into the future for economic development and trade? So it was not a trench, it was a fountain of growth and development.
Well, it was intended as such, but the problem is that this trench was never finished. It started in the year 792, so even in the early Middle Ages, but the problem was, well, there were two problems, basically. The first is that the soil which was dug out of the trench was piled up right to the sides of the trench, and we know that the winter of the year 792 was very rainy, and so all that soil was washed right back into the trench. And so for this reason, after just half a year of building work, the canal project was abandoned altogether. And the second problem was that even in case the trench would have been finished, he didn't build this trench between the rivers of Main and Danube itself, because they were far too far away from in the Middle Ages, but he used a couple of smaller rivers, the Rezat and the Altmühl. And the problem with these two rivers is that at that point where he built the trench to connect them, these rivers had just a depth of, let's say, 1 meter. So even if he would have finished this trench, the rivers would have been far too flat, not deep enough for boat trade. And so his project in the Middle Ages was doomed right from the beginning, unfortunately to say.
Again, if somebody listening in Toronto or Buffalo or New York City would like to buy some of your books and learn from your website, where do they go?
Well, our website is www.urban-history.eu, or you can drop us an email at info@urban-history.eu. It's a very nice book with very nice pictures. I can highly recommend it.
Very good. Now, with the lecture with your counterpart, Alexander Estel, he told how there were certain regions in Germany where they do want to do some more canal development, but environmentalists stop this. And we have this throughout the United States, that preservationists and environmentalists put stops to much development on land or water. But isn't this, without the development, really holding back the economy and jobs?
Well, of course it is in a way holding back economy. The hope on the other side is that by a healthy economy, by the healthy environment, it could perhaps create jobs. How it does so? Well, let's wait and see. I mean, the modern canal which we're cruising today between the Main and the Danube rivers, the Main-Danube Canal, was built in the 20th century between the years 1960 and 1992. And environmentalists were putting up resistance against that project even back in the day. And you see that almost they even succeeded in stopping this whole project before it was finished. In 1982, the German federal government completely stopped its financial support because of environmentalists. And so in 1980, construction work on the canal stopped before it had been finished. And so almost this canal would not exist at all anymore. But 2 years later on, 1982, there was a general election, and the Conservative Party came into power, and they overruled resistance by environmentalists. And so the canal became finished today.
Well, you would think that environmentalists would appreciate the enhanced beauty and opportunities of the canal system, and they can preserve the new environment.
Absolutely. The canal is really a very much a green project. It's completely forbidden to dump anything at all into the waters of the canal. So the Main-Danube Canal is a very, very, is very good water quality, and there is a huge variety of fish living in that canal today. I think I remember that the largest fish which was even caught in that canal was a catfish with a length of 1 meter, 81 centimeters. And I mean that it grew to such a large, that it became so big, that is really testimony that water quality cannot be bad in that canal. And so it's very good for the environment today, I would say.
Very good. One last question about the competition between the canals and the rail system in Europe that made it difficult to finish and fund the canal system. Tell us about that, Dr. Andreas Klein.
You see, the canal which you're cruising today has a predecessor, which was built in the 19th century, from 1835 to 1845. And during that time, railway was introduced into Germany. So at the when the canal was finally finished, it was technologically already outdated. So the railway was a serious competition right from the start. And with regards to that old canal in the 19th century, railway had a large number of advantages. The biggest advantage was, you see, to connect the Main and the Danube rivers, the canal has to overcome a mountain range, mm-hmm. the Franconia in Switzerland. And in the 19th century, engineers were not able to build locks very high. So to prevent water from flowing down in the canal all of the time, a huge number of small locks had to be built. On a length of 103 miles, this old canal has a number of exactly 100 locks. So almost at every mile you've got a lock. And to make things even worse, a couple of those locks were being operated by one and the same lock keeper. Mm-hmm. Meaning, when he had operated one, he had to run on his feet to the next one to operate it. And I guess you can imagine this didn't do very much to speed up things on the canal. So ships and boats on that canal were moving very, very slowly. Railway was much, much faster. And so in the 19th century, the railway won the competition heads down, you could say.
I'm sorry we have to bring the Rusk Report to a close. Our guest has been Dr. Andreas Klein. He's involved with a group called Urban History. You can get their books at, look at their website, www.urban-history.edu. That's www.urban-history.edu. Thank you for enlightening us, Dr. Klein, and thank you to our Director of Production for the past 15 years, Kevin Carr. We've learned so much from Dr. Andreas Klein. Have a good week.
You've been listening to The Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at the Western New York community with news, features, and special guests. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Brian Rusk, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.